ORAMs. When you use a ORAMs key tag, you protect your keys.
If you lose your keys,
the finder can call the number on the back of the tag.
Or drop them in any mailbox.
And the ORAMs will return your keys to you.
For free.
Order your key tags today at ORAMs.ca.
And make a difference in the lives of amputees, like me.
Thank you.
You're listening to an encore edition of the Rockin' Blues Show, episode number 402, featuring my interview with Savoy Brown founder Kim Simmons, originally aired back on June 22nd, 2019. I'll be back next week with two new hours of the best in rock and blues music. Enjoy the show.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca because you are better than most people. Thank you.
Welcome to week 402 of the Rockin' Blues Show. I'm your host, Brent Morse, and I'll be here for the next 2 hours playing the best in rockin' blues music. Lots to get to this week, including my three-part interview with blues rock legend and Savoy Brown founder Kim Simmons. But I'll get things started off with birthday boy Big Bill Morganfield, who turned 63 on Wednesday. He was born June 19th, 1956 in Chicago. It was years after the death of his father, the legendary Muddy Waters, that Big Bill got serious about a career in music. And while a good name and genes can help, like his older half-brother Mud, Big Bill honed his craft until he made his debut with Blind Pig Records in 1999, which teamed him with some of Muddy's favorite bandmates, Bob Margolin on guitar and producing, Pinetop Perkins on piano, Paul Osher on harmonica, and Willie Big Eye Smith on drums. Rising Sun was a popular and critical success, earning Morganfield the 2000 Blues Music Award for Best New Artist Debut. Since then, he's released six more albums, toured steadily, and took part in the centennial tribute to Muddy Waters, closing out the 32nd annual Chicago Blues Festival with the likes of Margolin, Osher, and Mud. From 2016's Bloodstains on the Wall, this is Big Bill Morganfield with Help Someone.
Somebody to help you out. Helping each other, that's what it's all about. When I was growing up, I didn't have a whole lot. Didn't really think much about helping other people. Took me growing up to be a man before I understood. You gotta help someone. One day you might need help too. Somebody standing on the corner with a sign saying, I work for food. You got a pocket full of money, son. Don't just walk by and say, ain't nothing I can do for you. Your stuff together, you know somebody who's a little bit down on their luck and they need a helping hand, do what you can, cause you never know, one day you might need help too. talking all the time about what they got. I got this and I got that. Lord have mercy. But remember one thing, the good Lord giveth and he can take it back. I think this world will be a whole lot better if we helped each other out. If you know somebody that's down, reach out a hand and try to help them up. You know, help someone. That's what this life is all about.
Cracking with the eggs when she hears that orange juice twisting, she'll be right up on her legs. Yes, absolutely.
Closing out our opening set of Rockin' Blues music from her new sophomore release, That's How I Roll, we had Calgary's Deborah Power with I'm Coming Around. Before that, from his new release, Down That Road, we had Nanaimo's Whitey Summers with My Baby Likes to Boogie. And I got this week's Rockin' Blues show started off with birthday boy Big Bill Morganfield and Help Someone from his 2016 release, Bloodstains on the Wall. This is the Rockin' Blues show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set, the first part of my three-part interview with blues rock legend Kim Simmons. I've got Kim Simmons from Savoy Brown on the phone with me from New York. How are things going out there tonight?
Very good, thank you. I'm home for a little while. Actually got a show this weekend in the Midwest, but at the moment I'm enjoying time at home.
Savoy Brown's new album, City Night, came out on June 7th. It's the 40th of your career. How does it feel to hit that milestone?
I know, it's a little crazy, you know, when you look back over time, especially back to the 60s, you know, it doesn't quite feel like that was me back then. I actually lived that life, you know, and it's crazy. I think my career now is 53 years or something. It's nuts to have done this or anything for that length of time, you know, but as I say, it's a mystery to me.
Does it seem like it's been a long time, or does it seem like it's kind of flowing by?
Well, it has flown by, you know, to a degree that everybody says that, you know, life goes quickly and when you look back. And yet, looking back to the very early days, I mean, that seems like in the dark ages or something, you know, you realize that you've been around a long time, you realize that you've stretched over decades, and, you know, and so that kind of gives you perspective that it's been a long time. You know, I think I understand that it's been a long time, and I think that I understand that, you know, I've had a long life, and I think I understand those things. And, you know, having said that, it's really difficult to find yourself at my age, you know, and realize, damn, you know, it's all behind you, you know. But that's why I keep recording, that's why I try to keep fresh and do what other people of my generation are not doing, you know, and I think that's because you're trying to, you know, bridge the gap between when you were a teenager making music and now.
Like I said, the album came out on June 7th. What have the early reviews been like?
Well, everything's been great, I must admit, and I think you always have reservations about your own albums. I always have had with me anyway, you know, so you expect anything. But so far, everything's been positive, which is very nice. Radio has really taken to it. And I do think I'm coming to understand the album a little. And I do think that it has a uniqueness. I think that obviously I'm only 71, but, you know, that gives me a lot of creativity that younger people haven't got. Not so much creativity, they've got the creativity. I mean, it gives me a lot of depth, you know. I'm able to sound like I'm from the 60s, but at the same time, sound like I'm, you know, from the present time. And I do think that the album is unique in that sense, but at the same time, I'm aware of its faults, you know. And so it'll be a while before I can listen to it myself.
I think you might have seen this review. It was on Twitter from David Gogo, who I know you've played with a bit.
So yeah, I know Dave. He's a great guy, great musician.
Yeah, so this is what he tweeted. Just listen to the first two cuts of the new Savoy Brown album. Good crikey, some serious kicking of balls. Can't wait for the rest. Wicked guitar tones.
Oh, how sweet is that? That's really nice. And, of course, we're friends, so I've sent him a copy, so I'm interested to see what he thinks when he gets it. But, yeah, people have been mentioning the guitar tone and so forth. I'm in a good place with my guitar playing, and that's nice. You know, you're not always in the best of places. So as a guitar player, most of us are always, you know, searching and looking for something different. But right now I'm comfortable where I'm at, and maybe it shows on the album.
Your last album, 2017's Witchy Feelin', it reached number one on Billboard and earned you your first nomination at the 2018 Blues Music Awards. What did you think of that when you heard the news?
Well, it's extremely exciting, you know, and I went down to Memphis for the awards, and it was nice to meet a lot of people. I'd never been there before, and to see the album do so well. And so after, it must have been a couple of months or something, I actually did play the album myself. And I'd better listen to this and find out what people like about it. Because usually I'll play, you know, especially with your own stuff, you know, you just play an inkling of it, you know, you play a minute of it and you move on. So it kind of get the flavour of what you were doing. But with Witchy Feeling, I put track one on and I wanted to listen to it to the end. And track two came on and I wanted to listen it to the end. So I was really quite surprised that it's one of the only albums I've listened to where I actually wanted to listen to the end of the song, you know, rather than saying, oh, I could have done this better or that better, you know. So I enjoyed it myself, and I think that's a rarity for artists to do. And of course, I was really thrilled that it did so well. But it did put pressure on me for this album. That one suddenly done well. Now I've got to follow it up. And immediately after Wishy Feeling, I started writing new songs for this album. And in fact, right now, I'm writing new songs for 2020. Only because you don't want to get that writer's block, you know. And if an album does well, and I'm hoping this one does well, irrespective if it doesn't or not, I'm writing because I want to stay ahead of myself.
You mentioned a little bit, you formed the Savoy Brown Blues Band in 1965 with John O'Leary on harmonica when you were still a teenager and released its first singles the next year. What are your best memories of those first days as a band?
Oh, it was fantastic days, you know. I met John, I was going to a record store on Saturday mornings that imported American blues albums, and it was raining, I was standing, I must have been the first person there, you know, waiting for the doors to open. I was in the doorway, and guy gets next to me and stands there, and we started talking, and it was John O'Leary, and he played harmonica, I played guitar, and so we got together, played some records, he had some great rare records, and then we decided to form a band, and it was very, very exciting, you know. Looking back, I had the right idea how to do it, and so we opened our own club, because we had no idea how you got gigs or anything. So there was a pub that had an upstairs room that used to be a folk club. It had a stage and everything. So we spoke to the pub owner and said, you know, we'd like to start up a club again, you know, playing blues. And so we started on a Wednesday night, and I think we put some posters up around London. Six people came the first night, and before we knew it, it was packed. So that's how I started. I've got great memories. I've got great memories for the first band. John, the harmonica player, left pretty quickly. After the first singles, he didn't stay for the first album. So one of my big regrets is that I'll never know, you know, quite what that first band could have done after the singles, because I think the singles were great in 66. And by the time 67 came around with the first album, I was 19 years old, but John had left. Now I look back, and really I would have liked the first band to have continued intact, you know, for much longer than just the singles, but that's how it goes.
There was tons of competition in Britain alone in those days. How did you guys set yourself apart?
Well, the competition had moved on. The Rolling Stones, the Yardbirds, the Animals had all had big hits, and they'd become mainstream rock acts, really. And so the only thing going on in London was dance music. You know, Motown was the big thing, and all the bands were playing Motown music. It reverted back to that, as it always does. The basic thing of music, you know, get people moving. But obviously I wanted to do a music that wasn't dance music as such. So, as I say, there was a void. People that wanted blues music in London, there was not much around. I didn't know it at the time, you know, I wasn't being that studious or anything. My time had come, you know, I could play guitar, I'd studied it all my life, and, you know, I wanted to start a blues band. It didn't occur to me that I was filling the void, because all I knew was, it was all dance music, and I couldn't get a gig. Yeah, but we started, and I think that's one of the things really possibly to success, you know, looking back, is you don't want to do what everybody else is doing, you know, for better or for worse. I mean, there's no guarantee I was going to be successful. But looking back at it, I could see that it was a pretty brilliant move because, you know, everybody told me not to do it. You know, oh, don't do that. You know, blues is gone. You know, the Rolling Stones have been and gone. Little did everybody know that a huge blues boom was about to hit the country in 68. But, you know, in 66, I was one of the people that helped make that happen. So I was ahead of the curve. But everybody told me not to form the band. Even guys that finally joined the band didn't want to at first. They were trying to discourage me. And it was very difficult at first to get into the clubs. You know, credit to John Mayall, he was going at the time and was a trailblazer. And that helped me a lot because John recorded the Beano album for Decca Records with Eric Clapton. Then the next album they recorded in that genre by the same producer was Savoy Brown Records. So John Mayall was definitely, you know, a trailblazer. He knocked the door open and I helped keep it open.
Yeah, and he's like 12 years older than you and he's not slowing down either.
Well, he's just amazing. season. I know. Is he 12? Is it 12 years? I'm 71. He's 83.
Damn. I think so. Yeah.
But he was ancient back then. You know, I think when I was 19, he was 37 or something crazy. He's probably older than 83, and nobody knows it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia. From their new release, City Night, the 40th of their career, that was Savoy Brown with Hangin' Tough. And before that, the first part of my three-part interview with Savoy Brown co-founder and blues rock legend Kim Simmons. I'll have the other parts later in the show. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set from his new release, For Love and Money, this is Vancouver's Harp Dog Brown with the title track.
Love and money.
west to the Fino and east past Thunder Bay. Love for you. I hit it dead.